We're continuing Koelis. We're up to what's called the fourth chapter, the ninth pasuk. Tovim ha'shenayim min ha'echad asher yesh lachem sachar tov ba'amalam. Two are better than one, because they, in their toils, they will make much more money, because two can complement one another and they can achieve much, much more. And now Shlomo is discussing the benefits of companionship. He has reached a certain impasse where he says, do what's good and enjoy it. Enjoy the path. Don't try to make too much money. What's it all worth? Just live a life where you can enjoy and live a moral, good, pious life and enjoy it as you're living it. And he says, yeah, but I'm not so happy. I haven't really answered all the questions. You know, that's a pretty lame way of living life. Is that the best we can do? What about all the injustices in the world? So he begins by discussing the most basic form of companionship. And he says, two are better than one. Ki im yipolu ha'echad yakim et chavero ve'ilo ha'echad she'yipol ve'in sheni la'hakimo. Because if he falls, so if there are two, one helps the other one get up. But woe to the person who is single, and when he falls, there's no one there to help him get up. And here's a word to the wise guys. If you're going on trips on Hanukkah, don't go alone. Take someone along. So people always like to go alone. I was begging a guy not to go alone. You know how many students I've buried who lived alone? You know how many? They lived alone, and then this guy had a flu that went bad, and he died in bed. No one knew about it until he didn't show up this year. He was a steady attendant. Every Friday he'd show up this year. And then he didn't show up Friday this year. So I got worried. So I found the body. And he wasn't the first. There's what to be said for having someone else. There was a guy I was begging today not to go alone to his travels in the desert. He's going hiking in the desert now, Hanukkah. You shouldn't do that alone. I know people like to go alone. Okay, at least someone should know where you are, and you should check in by someone. And ideally, go with a friend. A person goes alone and he falls. Who's going to be there? No one's there to pick him up. What? Which book?
127 Hours.
No.
This guy goes to the mountain climbing. He gets stuck in a mountain for 127 hours with his arms stuck in a rock.
Just when he rips his arm off and then.
No, his arm was stuck within a rock. And the wall was the only way of. You talk about the story where you had to cut it.
Yeah.
So there's an arm.
That's a true story. That's a true story.
On the mid upper arm. A few fingers. The only way of saving his life was to use what he had, a knife in his pocket, to cut his arm off.
Come on, what about prayer? What about prayer?
Maybe 27 hours.
He managed to
I don't know,
27 hours. I don't think I'll have one.
Oh boy. Okay. Gam im yishkevu shenayim vecham lahem ul echad eich yecham. He's giving an example from something that we sense. If two people lie down together, so then their most basic benefit of being two is that they'll heat up one another. Whereas if one person's alone, he's alone. That's it. He's got nothing to heat him other than himself. And this is an example. It's an example and a metaphor for a lot of things in life. When you're yourself, you're limited to yourself. I was once talking to a guy who was considering joining a family business, and he kept telling me, I shouldn't join. Why not? He said, because we're all one family and we see things the same way. I said, great, so you won't have arguments. So he said, no, it's not great. Because we'll all have the same blind spots and we'll all see things the same way, and then we'll all fall together. You don't get up together, you fall together. You need that difference. You need someone else with you who's going to see things differently, and his strengths will complement your weaknesses. So when a person's all alone and he's just with himself, so he can't grow that way. The verse says in Mishlei, in Proverbs, Shlomo Amel says, Barzel uvarzel yachad. Metal on metal sharpens one another. Sharpen metal against metal. And one person sharpens his friend. Even when it comes to philosophy and intellectual things and learning, you have two people, so they both grow, and this applies to many things in life. So he's giving a simple example, which is an example and a metaphor, about how two, when they lie together, they warm one another up. But it's not only that. That's the most basic example. Yes? No, you could do that too. Right. Pasuk Yud Beis. V'im yitkifo ha'echad ha'shinayim yamdu negdo. And if he's attacked by one, so then the two stand and face him. V'achut ha'meshulash lo v'imera yinateik. And if you have a string that's been doubled over and tripled over, it's not so easy to tear it. And this is again a mashal, it's again an allegory that, of course, three are even better than two. So, again, he's saying it protects, it gives companionship, even if there aren't external elements, the person himself falls, someone else can pick him up, they can make more money together. When you have two in unison, and of course three in unison, so then that's something which is very, very powerful. Again, the key here is the unity, right? When you have two who are against one another, you don't have two, you have two individuals. Chazal tell us on this pasuk, v'achutam shulash lo v'imera yinatek, that this pasuk is a formula for life. That if you have three generations that have been consistent in Torah observancy and they've all grown in the ways of the Torah, it's not so easy to uproot it from that family. V'achutam shulash, three generations, like a rope that's been doubled and tripled over, lo v'imera yinatek. It's not so quick, it's not so easy to undo that rope. So that's what Chazal say. If you've merited to see you, your son, your grandson, go in the way of Torah, so then you could rest more easily. Tov yeled miskein v'chacham mimelech zakein uchsil asher lo yada lizaher od. Very famous and important pasuk. Again, the simple meaning of the pasuk. Tov yeled, it's better to have a child who is miskein, who is impoverished. So he's a child, he's impoverished, he's got the cards stacked against him, but he is chacham, he is wise, so people are going to listen to him.
And now we said that wisdom is hadam.
All right, let's see, right? Let's see. He is better than a king who is old, so people should listen to him. He's king, he's old, but he's a fool. Asher lo yadali yizaher od. He doesn't know what to be careful of. He thinks himself smart, so he doesn't know how to be careful, and that's the worst situation, where a person thinks he's smart, because then he doesn't realize where the pitfalls are, because he's confident in himself. So right away, Ari asks, wait a second, we just said wisdom is Havel. How'd Shlomo get to this? So let's hear him out, and then we have to come back and see what Chazal interpreted in the Pasuk. Ki mi beit asurim yatza limloch. So what are we comparing? We have a child who is poor and smart. He's not going to get too many people to listen to him. They should listen to him, but they won't necessarily because he's a child and he's poor. Then you have someone else on the opposite side of the spectrum. He's old, he's wealthy, he's king, but he's stupid. And he doesn't even know that he's stupid. That's the biggest problem. Ki mi beit hasurim yatza limloch. This child, with his wisdom, could get out of jail and end up being king. Who are we talking about? Yosef, very good. Ki gam b'malchuto nolad rash. People will say about him, even though he was born poor, he was born to be king. Ki gam b'malchuto nolad rash. He was born poor to be king. People will look at him and say, he's so smart, that's where he belongs. Ra'iti et kol ha'chayim hamhalechim tachat ha'shamesh. He says, I've seen all the people walking under the sun. I've seen them working very hard. I've seen them working diligently. Im ha'yeled ha'sheni asher yamod tachtav. I've seen a second son And there's, you have this wise person who made it to the throne, and now you have the next in line. And I thought to myself, wait a second, what's going to happen here? You have all these diligent people. You have the wisdom and where wisdom can bring a person. And I said to myself, he's going to make it. I said to myself, look at this child. He's got the brains, but he doesn't have the throne. And when I see a second one that has the brains, I say to myself, he's going to take the throne next. In Keitz Lecholam, Shlomo HaMelech says, people seem to have no limit. Lechol asher haya lifneihem, gam acharonim lo yismechu bo. There's been so much good, and yet people aren't happy with what they have. When they had a foolish king, they were upset, things aren't good enough for us. And then they get a smart king, and they're upset, things aren't good enough for us. The nature of people is they always want better. In Keitz Lecholam, there's no end to the desires of the nation, even though they got a better king now, they got someone smart. Gama achonim. Ultimately, you have another child who's wise. You've had two good kings, one after another, and yet they're still not happy. Gama achonim lo yismechu bo. They're always going to say, we want it better. You had two smart kings who made it really good for you. But that's not good enough. Ki gam ze hevel v'rayon ruach. So then, I am approaching this and saying wisdom is good, it'll get you to the top. I am approaching this saying we need companionship, we need to care for the injustices of society. So let's say you'll get to the top. Will that make people happy? Have you resolved society's ills? Or are you back to square one where people have it good, they have a righteous king, they have a smart king, and they're still unhappy? So Shlomo says, yeah, theoretically, the wisdom of the child is going to get him to the top. And I've said that you can't just lead a life where you're living life okay and everything's fine. But even when you get to the top using the wisdom, you didn't resolve anything. People are still unhappy. People still want it better. Gam ze hevel v'rayon ruach. This too is also destructive. It breaks any philosophy to think, what am I going to attain when I get there? So where's wisdom going to lead me? Am I going to resolve the issues of the world?
Can you explain that?
Shlomo said, okay, two are better than one. Three are better than two. Companionship is better than being alone.
Where did he say three are better than two?
V'achutam shulash lovi
merayinatek. When did he say that?
That was the end of Pasuk Yud Beis.
Okay.
A rope that's repeated three times is not going to be easy to sever.
Okay, so hold on. So I'm guessing he said before he said that an impoverished child would
right.
Be
dumb. Then he says, okay, someone smart, even though he seems to have everything stacked against him, is better than someone stupid who's in a position of power. And he's going to make it even from prison, he'll get to the top. But then I look at life, and I see that when he gets to the top, and even if there'll be another child who gets to the top after him, and they'll have two smart kings in a row, and then theoretically you have the optimal situation, the best companionship. You have a king that brings about unity. You have a king that brings about prosperity. You have everything you could hope for. And you have it time after time. Ein keitz lechol ha'am. But when I look at people, that won't bring happiness. As much material good and unity and whatever good you can impart to people, you're not going to get them happy. Now, the truth is he's talking about himself.
That's
too.
That's what I was about to question, because you know, you take David HaMelech, and you know, based on what the situation was, even Shaul HaMelech, you know, before there was the Hebrew monarchy, you know, there was no unity, and there was the way the wars were fought, whatever, you know, it was not far from an ideal situation. And then Shaul's kingship comes and you know makes this sort of you know, it builds the kingdom, but it's still not an ideal kingdom. It's not, and then David advances it, but in a very, very incredible way. You know, far beyond what Shaul was capable of. Because, I mean, Shaul, it's kind of like, you know, Shaul was able to make, like, the, I don't want to say state, because it was a kingdom, but was able to make, you know, with an army and a police force and some sort of, you know, in a system of sovereignty and nationalistic system that was going on over the domain of Israel. But then David advanced that to being more, more holistic and more, you know, furthered it to be complete and then holy, whatever. But then Shlomo was really the one who brought it all to its culmination, which is why it's interesting to see him say this here, because he is the product. He is the son, the continuation of you know, that first gifted king who really was, I mean, impoverished. I mean, Yishai didn't even want to show the prophet Shmuel David, because he was like, yeah, he's the red one. He's the kid with the red hair, you know, with the flock. You know, you're my real kids, my real strong ones, all of them. But you know, but he's the one who still became king and brought the kingdom to such a, you know, to the point where we're ready to build a temple. He couldn't do it himself. He wasn't, you know, for whatever reason. But he got it. He brought the Hebrew kingdom to that point, and then Shlomo, culminated it to the point where, you know, all the foreign leaders of the world were coming and seeing the holiness and the holisticism, whatever of the temple and everything in Jerusalem, and it was all good. And yet he still manages to lose the kingdom, you know, because he's Kohelet's writing this, not Shlomo. He's not in a position to where he's the king anymore. So I guess that's why he's saying it's all Havel.
Well, I think he's saying we didn't accomplish. He's saying, if you can have the wise and leadership, so what is the wisdom availed? If as good as they'll make it, people will still be unhappy. You did not resolve society's ills.
Is he implying that there is not a way to do so, and the proof of that is the fact that he, being the son of David and the continuation of the wise king and all of that, who had wisdom himself and did bring the kingdom to its peak, was still failed to bring it to the ultimate completion, even though it was definitely the peak?
I don't think he's reached a conclusion yet. He's on a course. And one of the things he's demonstrating now is that just because you'll put a wise man in leadership and two wise men and you'll have a succession of correct leadership doesn't mean you will have resolved the ills of society. It is still something that destroys one's thought. It is still something hurtful to think that as good as you'll be, and even if you get the good on top, you still haven't resolved society's ills. It's one stage in his thought. Beforehand he said, I have to just focus on myself. Then he said, yeah, but if I focus on just leading a good, happy life, what about all those people that are being afflicted unfairly? He said in the last chapter. You have all those people that are being cheated and robbed and they're crying and no one's there to comfort them. So he says, okay, and what if I do take the throne? And what if you do appoint the wise men in leadership? Well, people are still not going to be happy. You might have resolved the Ashukim. The king's job is to fight for the people being cheated. But you haven't resolved society's ills. People are not happy.
I have a question, Rabbi. Is, in addition to all of these sub-points that we're discussing, because, you know, king better than one, child, impoverished, king that's a fool, is a general theme and purpose of Kohelet to cause the reader to build patience, sablanut? Because every time we learn it, I come to, you know, having to accept that I have to be patient right now. I have to. It's
right?
Did Kohelet mean for this?
I don't know. Maybe he meant for it all to be learned in one long night.
Maybe, but either way. But even so, okay, even right now, I got to be patient for what you're about to say next.
Right, and Malasseh. It's a long, hard book. In that sense, I agree.
No, but I'm saying, is there like a commentary that says this is what it, you know?
I don't know.
Write that one.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It sounds like at this point, the problems is not the societal problems. It's the problems about people's outlook. They simply have the wrong outlook about things. But things are going good. The king has managed to make society function well. It's just that people have a lack of appreciation and bad outlook on things.
Okay, but he seems to say you're never going to educate the masses. Let's take it the next step. So you're right. It's people's outlook. People are always wanting more. So as smart as a king can be and as good as a king can be, it seems like he's saying you're not going to change that. That's something you're not going to change. Their desire for better, as good as you'll make it for them, they're still going to want better.
But that's still a big improvement. I mean, you've done a lot there.
I don't know. I don't know if you've done a lot. I think you've done a lot because at least you've removed to the best of your ability the things that aren't fair that would cause a person misery. Now it's up to the person to find happiness.
Right,
but he's not saying that yet.
Okay.
Wait, let's see. Let's see. Yeah.
No, I was going to say that based on the beginning of this entire class, almost, like one of the initial concepts, I think, could, you know, okay, well, you've shown the way or whatever, people should be happy, and if they're not, then obviously they're not fulfilling what their inner soul wants to do, so beat it out of them. Get them.
פסוק י"ז, שמור רגלך כאשר תלך אל בית האלוהים. שמור רגלך, watch your feet as you go to the house of Hashem. What he's really saying is רגלך could mean your causes. רגל could mean a cause. He's saying, watch yourself, watch the causes, why you end up coming to the temple. I think this is best understood by a line my 8th grade Rebbe told us sometime in the middle of the year. He says, no one calls me up unless they got problems. Mm-hmm. They graduate and everyone forgets me. Until they're about to be kicked out of their high school, and then they give me a call and they say, Rebbe, help me out. What am I supposed to do now? Can you get me into another high school? He says, I don't hear from the guys until they're in trouble. So Shlomo HaMelech is saying, watch yourself. When you go to the temple, you shouldn't be one of those people who only show up at the temple when they got problems.
Wait, he says, so watch yourself?
Well, watch your feet, which can also be interpreted as watch your causes. Why is it that you go? Kasher telech el beit ha'elokim. וקרוב לשמוע מיתת כסילים זהבך. וקרוב לשמוע. וקרוב, a person is more close to Hashem. לשמוע, when he listens. מיתת כסילים זהבך. From the sacrifices that the fools offer. In one's relationship to Hashem, there is also a demand to be intelligent. כי אינם יודעים לעשות רע. Because the fools, they don't think about whether their actions are good or bad. They think, God's happy if I sin, so long as I bring a sacrifice afterwards. Look at me, I'm bringing a sacrifice, I'm okay.
Because the fools don't what?
They don't think, כי אינם יודעים, they don't recognize לעשות רע, that what they're doing is bad. People sometimes think, if I bring a sacrifice, I'm okay. I spoke to a guy, he told me, I'm going to cheat on my taxes. I said, what do you mean? He said, don't worry, I'll give some charity. What does that have to do with anything? I was standing at the checkout counter yesterday, and there was change, so I took it, and then as I'm about to leave the counter, I realized it wasn't my change. It was there from before I came to the counter, so I start reaching into my pocket to put it back, so the woman behind the counter says, what do you care? Put it in a tzedakah box. It's not my money to put in a tzedakah box. What do you mean? That's not my change. So Shlomo HaMelech says, you have a lot of people who don't recognize that if I do something bad, the fact that afterwards I'll do something good, I'll bring a sacrifice, that doesn't change that what I've done is bad. V'karov lishmoa. A person should realize that Being close is accepting what Hashem said. Obeying the Torah, mitet aksilim zevach, and that's much better than sacrifices that stem from keinam yodim lasot ra, because they don't think about it as doing something bad so long as I bring sacrifice afterwards. Al tevahel al picha velibecha al yemaher lo tzi devar lifnei ha'elohim. Don't be quick when you speak. Even when you want to say something before God, and you're pretty upset at the way He's running the world, don't be quick. Don't let your heart seduce you into being quick. Lo tzi davar lifnei Elokim, to express something before Hashem, to speak harshly towards heaven. Ki ha'elohim b'shamayim v'ata al ha'aretz, because God's in heaven and you're on earth. Al kein yiyu devarecha me'atihim. So, try to minimize what you have to say. Because you're going to talk too much, you're going to end up cursing towards heaven. So, remember, when you're fighting a war, if there's a guy standing on top, he doesn't have to be much stronger than you. He could drop rocks, right? He could just push over rocks and boulders. Well, God's in heaven, you're on earth. So be a little careful what you say. Ki bahachalom b'chov inyan. Shlomo HaMelech says, just as a dream comes from inyan, from things that a person's been thinking about during the day, the more you think about it by day, the more you're apt to dream about it by night. Ki bahachalom b'chov inyan. Just as a dream comes after you've looked into something. Vekol kesil berov devarim. By the same token, it is common to find the voice of a fool in his complaints when a person talks too much. When a person talks too much, he's apt to say things that he regrets. And the same is true even towards heaven. A person doesn't realize when he speaks too much that he's going to ultimately say things that he himself doesn't think are intelligent.
Repeat that, please. The actual wording.
And then just as a dream stems from things you've thought about a lot during the day. Vekol kesil berov dvarim. By the same token, foolishness is expressed. The voice of a fool comes out when one speaks too much. There's tremendous depth in this pasuk. What's the connection? You think about something a lot by day, you'll end up dreaming a lot about it by night. You talk about something too much, you're going to end up saying something foolish. You talk towards heaven too much, you'll end up saying something foolish towards heaven. Don't talk too much. Wait. Saying that, let's first hear what was Shlomo HaMelech saying here.
Yeah, because you realize that for so long talking to heaven, nothing's happening. And eventually, you'll start saying things that aren't so flattering towards heaven.
I think it's different. What's happening when you think and then you dream?
Well, according to Freud, the dream is a wish fulfillment. If you're thinking about something during the day and you dream about it during the night, it's because you would really like for something in the place. Even negative dreams, which is aggressive. He says that it's like there's distortions in dreams, a censorship that takes place. The censorship module that distorts things that you would naturally feel to be very repulsive to you naturally. You have to have different representation in your dream so it isn't as hard for you to see in your dream. But if you understand your own connection to things in the world, different things that connections that you make with certain objects, with other things, you can generally find out what it is that you want to do. But it's I was going to say something else about the dream that was very interesting. You brought up
he said also. Oh yeah, no, it was Aristotle, because Aristotle used to treat patients. Or was it maybe it was Hippocrates? It was Hippocrates that used to ask people their dreams, because when they would say that they had a certain pain, or they dreamed that their leg was cut off, for example, you'd usually examine the part of that leg, and usually there was some malady there, because even though they couldn't sense it while they're awake, when they're asleep, their body is much more sensitive to pain, and it's, there's some kind of illusion in the dream. Like, sometimes it's like really, really hot in the room. You dream you're walking through fire. You wake up and you realize, my God, it's really, really hot in here. Or you have a dream that you, really need to go to the bathroom or something. That's one example. Yeah, and you have a dream that you have to go to the bathroom.
That's like, hey.
Very, very good. He's catching on.
It's, I've had a case, I think what you're saying is true too. I've had the case where I was dreaming that I was drowning, and it happened to be that my face was down and I couldn't breathe because of...
Oh, my goodness.
No, I mean, whatever, like, it was... I often have dreams, I mean, the water was...
We're going to start kind of this Freudian conversation.
It's like normal.
But no, it says that the dreams are that the kind of sometimes...
So you drown in the Torah, is that
to make you like, you know, because the body needs to keep a certain balance of homeostasis. And if you have a problem, the dream comes to make you aware of the problem and to make it...
Oh,
so
and it made me wake up. I realized that it's not good to be drowning, so we get out of this place, you know? And it's like, oh, wait, my face was downwards, that's why.
That's also wishful thinking?
You probably would have died. Well, your wish is that you could breathe normally again. And so the body, gives you this visualization so that you...
But drowning is a common theme in many dreams. That's what Freud says, is that, for example, drowning represents being trapped, not being able to escape is a form of drowning.
The good thing about Freud is he never gives you an exact method, each generation he realized that you're always going to have different representation for different things in your dream. Every generation, like, we don't ride horses anymore. So, just things like that, it changes from generation to generation what you're seeing in your dreams.
I.5.
Yes, exactly. Very good again. But it's interesting. It's a whole book, and I'm sure it might not all be correct. But the most part of it is the whole time I was like, very interesting. But yeah, I didn't realize Aristotle used to use that method on Hippocrates too.
So what's the connection? Kibah ha'chalom berov inyan. You think about a lot of things. So, then you're going to have dreams at night. And so too, the foolishness within us will come out if you talk too much. Okay?
Too many dreams. Too many thoughts, bad dream. Too many words.
See? Okay. The question is if there isn't a greater correlation here between where the dream is coming from and where the foolishness is coming from. Tov, back to the pasuk. Kasher. But maybe we'll pick up here next time.
What?
It's late, people have to go to sleep.
I don't know about that. Can we continue to... If we don't move on in Kohelet, can we at least continue to discuss this quote? Because I don't have a clear understanding of what should be understood from this?
So far, he is pushing in every direction. So far, he has said that leadership is not going to resolve the ills of society. And then he began a thought, which we're not yet finished, that when a person goes to the temple, he should be careful. He shouldn't be foolish and think just because he's bringing a sacrifice that's good. If the sacrifice is a product of a sin, that's not good. A person should be careful what he says before his Creator. He's shifted from our relationship to our fellow man, to our relationship with Hashem, be it Hashem's home, be it the sacrifices, be it our conversations towards heaven, where a person should pause and think and not be quick to talk. At the end of the day, whether you like it or not, Hashem is in control. And the fact that you have issues does not change the fact that he's in control. And just as when a person thinks a lot of things, ultimately at night he's going to see a representation of that in his dream, so too when a person says a lot of things, ultimately he's going to see some foolishness within what he says. He's going to end up saying things he regrets. As the verse says, "Berov devarim lo yechdal pasha." When you speak a lot, it's not likely that you'll miss out on saying things that are rebellious, silly, unthoughtful. So the question here is, we left it on that level. Maybe there's something deeper going on here, but for now we left it there. That's what we saw so far. He's shifted from the relationship, the importance of having a relationship, two are better than one, and he went through that, and then he said, okay, but at the end of the day, you're not going to resolve everything through that. Now he's shifted and he's starting, he hasn't finished yet, discussing the caution a person should have in his relationship towards heaven. Yes?